Welcome, everyone, to the Veterans News Hour with David Corey and Richard Hurley, a national news and talk program dedicated to military veterans issues. And now, your hosts, David Corey and Richard Hurley.
Good evening. Welcome to the Veterans News Hour for June the 17th, 2019. This is David Corey, along with my co-host, Richard Hurley. Thank you for joining us this evening. Hello, Richard.
Hey, David, and good evening to everybody out there. Tonight, we do have a very special guest, Mr. John Wells, the executive director of a nonprofit organization called Military Veterans Advocacy, which has a national agenda and national impact in helping to improve VA benefits for veterans and their families. Before he joins us in a moment, though, I want to remind everyone that this is a call-in show. Welcomes your views, your comments, and questions. So you can call us at any time during the show at 1-888-627-6008. Again, the toll-free call number is 1-888-627-6008. We will periodically mention the toll-free number again. But please take advantage of the opportunity to call in and speak to John Wells. Back to you, David.
Thank you, Richard. As you said, our guest tonight to discuss some important issues affecting veterans is John Wells, Executive Director of Military Veterans Advocacy. John Wells is a lawyer and one of the premier veteran advocates in the nation. He's also a retired Navy commander with extensive career experience as a surface warfare officer. He served in the Navy from 1972 to 1994. And over the course of his career, he was assigned to six different ships and several shore commands. He was qualified in all aspects of surface warfare, including command at sea. Of relevance to his second career, Mr. Wells attended law school at night while still on active duty. He was a member of the Law Review staff and contributed to several law school publications. Upon retirement from the military, he settled in Louisiana, opened a general law practice that emphasized military and veterans law. He has represented military members and veterans throughout the country, and he has extensive experience in both state and federal courts, and he travels often to Washington, D.C. for cases there. It's our great privilege to have John Wells back on our show. Let's welcome John Wells to the Veterans News Hour. How are you tonight, John?
Hey, doing very well. Thank you for having me, and good evening to everyone out there.
Yes, we have lots to talk about, so why don't we begin, John, if you could tell us about recent developments in Washington, D.C. on the Blue Water Navy issue.
Well, if you ever feel like you've been raped, I think that's what we've done. In January, myself and a pro bono lawyer from the Oric Law Firm brought a case up for an oral argument before the en banc Court of Appeals of the Federal Circuit. You know, those en bancs, which is full court, are hard to get. We argued, I said January, it was actually December, but on January 29th, the court rendered an opinion in a 92 decision basically saying that the territorial sea of Vietnam was part of that country, and for purposes of the Agent Orange Act of 1991, anyone who entered that territorial sea was actually covered just as if they were boots on the ground. Great victory. Everything was fine. Then they actually went further. You know, the court gave us everything we asked for plus more. They said, based on the VA regulation, if the ship went into what they called waters offshore, which extended past the territorial sea, they would also be eligible for coverage, not under the statute, but under the regulation. So that was a great victory, because now we had carriers that were on the fringes of the territorial sea that we would be able to cover. Unfortunately, Congress decided to jump on board after dithering around for a decade. And, you know, we went to the court because Congress just kept letting us down year after year after year. So we go, we get it through the court. We asked Congress to not introduce any legislation until that court case came out, because we knew it was going to define exactly what we could get. Okay. Instead, they had to jump in first month of the Congress and, you know, get their bills introduced and get pictures and get Twitter tweets and all that stuff. Of, oh, I'm doing this, I'm doing that. So The bill that they introduced was last year's bill, which was retread, and did not take into effect the impact of Procopio. We went back to them, and what they did was they put in some geographic points, which we had provided last year, okay, pre-Procopio. So we gave them geographic points. They used them again this year, but instead of calling them the territorial sea, which is what they are, they called it waters offshore. Well, that was the same thing that the court said, but the court said waters offshore went past the territorial sea. Now, the problem is, and David, you know this, we go back into court and argue, well, hey, we have a carrier that was out here in waters offshore. The court very well may come back and say, well, gee, we kind of thought that the waters offshore went past the territorial sea, but Congress has spoken, and we have to yield to Congress.
Right.
And that could really cut out tens of thousands of veterans that were covered under Procopio. Now, all is not lost. We're telling people that that legislation does not go into effect until January 1st, 2020. So they need to get their claims or get their appeals filed prior to that. If they were outside the territorial sea, but within the Vietnam service medal area, get your claim in, get your appeal in, and we'll be able to argue, I think, that this thing that Congress passed was not retroactive. It, in fact, was proactive. Now, the difference, you know, there was the House bill. The Senate, on the other hand, did it right. They listened to us. In fact, we drafted the Senate bill. It's called S-1195. And all it did was just basically say that the territorial sea to the maximum extent authorized by international law would be included. It's exactly what we wanted. It incorporated Procopio and gave us the flexibility we needed for litigation. So that was good. But instead, the big six VSOs pushed the House bill by Chairman Takano. I call it Takano's travesty, and was able to get it through. And, you know, the worst part about this, I spent the last week up in Washington, was I talked to a staffer who I trust, and there are some up there I trust, who leveled with me. He said, look, this is not accidental. It's intentional. And I tend to believe that because I sat there with Takano and said, look, you changed these words. Here, call it anything else. Call it territorial sea. That's what it is. Call it contiguous waters. Call it adjacent waters. Call it a pork chop. I don't care. Change it, and we're in business. You're not going to hurt us. Oh, yeah, well, look at that. Sure, I'll have staff call you. Staff called me, and that was a sham. But the staffer told me that the decision was made by people on both sides of the aisle in both parties that they did not want this to go past the territorial sea because it would open up more claims to be filed, and they were afraid it would overload the VA at the time when they seemed to be starting to make some progress on the backlog. And additional cost was also a factor. So my comment was, okay, if you want to do that, stand up and say so. Don't go out and say, oh, gee, we're doing such wonderful, great things for the Blue Water Navy. See my picture with some poor veteran I brought up here who really isn't quite sure what's going on. I'm great. Don't go up and, you know, at least not, don't be a hypocrite. Stand up and say what the hell you mean. Pardon my language. I'm sorry.
Right.
It's not supposed to say that over the air, but I'm a sailor, so, you know, you have to deal with it. The bottom line is they just completely screwed us. The VSOs. Now, I'm not sure exactly where the Legion was on this. I'm going to give them a pass at this point because I don't know. But other VSOs I know were adamant to support the House bill. I've talked to a number of them and said, hey, come on, Senate bill is what we want. Oh, well, we need the House bill to protect Procopio. You're not protecting Procopio. You're narrowing Procopio. So I get, I have a run-in with Randy Reese, the executive director of the Disabled American Veterans on Friday evening, just a chance encounter. I said, hey, man, what are you doing? You're cutting off our ability to help these folks. Oh, well, you're an attorney. Why don't you go litigate? And the answer is because you've cut off our ability to litigate. That's typical of the DAV. We're actually suing them here in Louisiana because they closed a claim without the veteran's permission, actually forged his name, but that's neither here nor there. VFW, I refer to as very freaking worthless. Actually, I use another word beginning with F, but I won't use that on the air. You know, they've been adamant from the get-go. Oh, look, we do everything. Anything about Blue Water Navy, we've done. Nobody else, you know, wants any credit and so on and so forth. I mean, it's just unbelievable. Look, they can have the credit. I don't care. But let's not shut off tens of thousands of veterans, and that is what has happened. It's just sickening. And I realize I'm probably burning some bridges here, but that's okay. I burned them, a few of them last week in Washington. Rick Weidman from VVA, who is supposed to be the veteran's veteran, okay? I've been arguing with him for weeks, okay? Calling him up the other night. What are you doing? Well, you know, this is the best thing. No, it's not the best thing. Well, we can fix it later. No, you're not going to fix it later. You know that.
Right.
Oh, well, you know, this and that. And I said, well, we think that you're cutting off all these veterans. Well, you're mistaken. I said, you know, it's not just me. It's the entire Procopio litigation team. Who are you to say that I'm mistaken? And, of course, Rick proceeded to cuss me out, which he's very good at doing, and hung up on me. Yeah, Rick, I'm mentioning your name. The Fleet Reserve Association had been supporting us throughout this thing, and finally they turned on us and signed a letter supporting the House bill rather than the Senate bill. It was just a complete stab in the back. You know, so
any reason, any known reason why they would do that?
They wouldn't tell me. They kept saying, oh, this is better than nothing, and it's not. You know, this bill did not add one veteran that wasn't already covered by Procopio. And the only thing it did was shut everything off. I think they were pressured. Okay. The Association of the U.S. Navy has stayed strong, by the way. They've supported us throughout the whole thing. Blue Water Navy, Vietnam Veterans Association, supported us throughout the whole thing. And really, up until the last week, Fleet Reserve did, too. But, you know, for those of you out there that are Navy vets, man, Association of the U.S. Navy, they stayed strong. So, you know, you might want to take a look at joining them if you haven't. All we can do at this point is mitigate the damage. I'm not going to say we don't have any behind-the-scenes things going on because, you know me, I certainly do. But how successful they will be, I don't know. But the thing that we can do right now, and we're asking everybody to do, is get your claim in or your appeal in. And that's important. I heard a VSO on, I think it was Channel 7 out of Sarasota. He was with the state veterans saying, oh, no, don't put your claim in now. Wait until the VA promulgates the rules. Well, the VA may not promulgate the rules for weeks or months.
Right.
You know, it's get the claim in now and protect yourself. Oh,
right.
299 hasn't been signed by the president. Who cares? Procopio is law.
Hey,
right.
John, I got this is Richard. Richard, I've filed five Blue Water claims in the last 4 weeks.
Good.
Three out of the five veterans said to me exactly what you just said, that they had originally started with a VSO and were told, you know, don't file them yet.
These VSOs are dangerous. They really are. And for people that have had a claim previously disapproved, you can file a supplemental claim based on new material evidence and, you know, get it retroactive to your original filing day. And that supplemental evidence can be, you know, a deck log, something from the cruise book. Doesn't matter, because if you can show that you're now within the territorial sea, which is defined as 12 miles off the baseline, you're covered. Even if you're past the territorial sea until January the 1st, and Dave and Rich, I think you probably agree with me on this. We can argue that they'd be grandfathered in under the Procopio decision rather than being cut off by congressional action. At least we can argue that.
So the legislation is effective or will be effective January the 1st of 2020. Is that right?
That's correct.
Okay. Okay.
So, sorry I got off on my soapbox there and started venting, but this has been something I've worked with for a decade and kept seeing Congress promise the world and not
right.
do anything. And, you know, the past Congresses have been, I'm not going to say they're great, but this House of Representatives has been terrible. You know, more form, no substance, all glitter and glory, and accomplishing very little when it comes to veterans.
I see. And to what extent would you attribute, you know, the change in the parties? You know, the Democrats are now in charge. There, I mean, before wasn't, my point being, by comparison, in the last Congress, weren't things relatively bipartisan?
Well, they were. And, you know, there's still some of that, I suppose. But it's everybody now just trying to put their face up in front of the cameras. I don't want to get into a Democrat-Republican thing.
Uh-huh.
I think what it is a politician thing.
I see.
I will say that I thought Dr. Rowe generally was a lot more competent as chairman than Mark Takano. But that has nothing to do with parties. That's just people.
Right.
Right. You know, Rowe at least was a veteran. Takano is not.
I see. Yeah. Now, John, I understand that you've decided to step down soon as the executive director of Military Veterans Advocacy. What can you tell us about changes and what are your own future plans?
Well, we had spent the week before last doing a corporate look-see with a plan on a corporate reconstruction. And my intent was to strengthen our board of directors, strengthen our other directors, and look towards a transition for sometime next year. Now, Colonel Rob Manus, U.S. Air Force retired, is going to be coming on. He's the chief of staff now, and he's going to come on as executive director at the end of July. Rob had 30 years in the Air Force. He was enlisted prior to being an officer. And frankly, with Blue Water being what it is, we're going to be shifting to other priorities, including Guam, where Rob was, burn pits, which he's been exposed to, Thailand, and other areas as well. Okay. So it makes sense. This is a good time to do it. The other problem is, frankly, I've burned a lot of bridges this last couple of months. I don't think there's too many people in the VSOs that like me. Breaks my heart. But unfortunately, we have to work with them. There's not, I can tell you that the House Veterans Affairs Committee staff, the majority staff, is really peeved at me, and that's okay. I'm kind of peeved at them, too. So, you know, it's probably better to get a different face of the organization. Now, we have three portfolios, litigation, legislation, education. And what we're going to do is I'm going to keep the litigation portfolio as well as education. Rob's going to take the legislative portfolio, okay, and we'll be the face up in Congress. I'm still going to, and by the way, I've agreed to stay on as chairman of the board. So, you know, it's at least for the next year or so. So, you know, I'm not completely going away. And until we get some of the other attorneys involved and you know, trained up in what we're doing, I'm probably going to have to handle the litigation. Which, by the way, guys, you know, we got job openings, and you can start at double my salary.
Okay. That sounds good. Now, what do you see on the horizon as far as, you mentioned briefly before, the burn pits, Guam. Can you share with us your thoughts on what might be happening and what you would like to see happen?
The problem that we have and we've been facing all along is the Pay-as-you-go Act of 2010. That requires us, if we're going to increase benefits somewhere, we have to decrease them. Well, when Procopio was issued, that problem went away, at least for the Blue Water Navy portion of the bill, okay? Because now the court mandate told the VA to take care of these veterans out, and they had to do it out of existing appropriations. They weren't, there was no need for a PAYGO offset. But, you know, if you look forward, going forward, PAYGO is still the problem. In fact, you know, I can say this. If Procopio hadn't been passed, there's no way that they would have been able to get the Blue Water bill passed. There's just, you know, it was going to be costed about $1.1 billion, and there's just no way they could do it. But with that PAYGO out of the way, they were able to actually jump on board and pass the bill and actually hurt us. But we have to eliminate PAYGO for veterans. Now, not against PAYGO. I think PAYGO has got some good ideas, and there's times when it applies. But, you know, we already pay for our benefits by our service. You know, the newsflash here is our disabilities are caused in service to the government because of our government service, and oftentimes due to our government. Look, the North Vietnamese did not spray one drop of Agent Orange, not one.
Right.
And I've yet to find any evidence that the Taliban dug a burn pit. We did it to ourselves.
Right.
Overseas contingency ops, there's no requirement for an offset there. You give a Marine 1,000 bullets, you don't take it away from another Marine. You know,
right.
and by golly, our disabilities are costs of war. They should be treated as such. There's a lot of money wasted, you know, fruit flies and all that stuff. By golly, they should be taking care of the veterans. But they don't. They put us under PAYGO. We have talked to several representatives about possibly putting in a bill that would exempt the VA from PAYGO. Get a lot of, gee, that's a good idea. But, you know, nobody has yet stepped forward to actually put that legislation in. Same time, we're looking at, as a long-term fix, establishing a toxic exposure research center to try to identify the health trends, okay? Find clusters and then ascertain whether or not there's a nexus between that cluster and toxic exposure. If you've got a bunch of Marines or a bunch of Air Force folks or whatever coming back and saying, you know, hey, I've got X problem, you know, and then you go say, okay, what can cause X problem? Oh, it's this. And sure enough, find that they were exposed to it. Then you can do a couple of things. First of all, you can take care of these folks earlier and possibly save their lives or save years off their lives. Secondly, it's preventive. You know, if we know that burn pits are causing breathing problems, it just makes sense to go build some incinerators.
Right.
I'll give you an example. We represent a lady, Lieutenant Commander, Environmental Health Officer, went to Camp Leatherneck, Afghanistan, said, guys, you can't use these burn pits. I mean, there are other issues, but the burn pits was a big one. You can't do it. You got your troops and third country nationals birthed downwind of the burn pits. You're just causing all kinds of problems. And, of course, the Marines were like, oh, go away. We don't want to listen to that. We want to kill bad guys. Okay, I understand that's what the Marines like to do, and that's why we have them. But, you know, we don't want to kill our own people. So she wound up, she would take air samples, and they told her to quit taking them. She said, no, I'm going to continue to take them. Okay, you take them or retain them. Don't turn them in. And she demanded to see the commanding general and everything else. Well, they said, fine, cashiered her. Sent her back with a nasty fitness report saying she can't get along with anybody. Okay. And it cost her career. 17 years and 1 month of service. She was passed over twice and not continued and forced out. Okay. 17 years, 1 month. Then she develops multiple myeloma, which is associated with burn pits. And unfortunately, she passed away this past July, 50 years old. So it cost not only her career but her life. But if we had listened to her and started building incinerators and using them, I mean, Leatherneck in 2013, they had incinerators. They weren't using damn things. If we had started forcing the Marines to build incinerators and to use them, think about
how many lives we'd save, how much misery we'd prevent, and how many billions of dollars we're not going to have to pay out over the next few decades, because burn pits are eventually going to be recognized.
Right.
And it's a lot of money going down the drain that we could be using for something else, like paying for our last problem. And look, I've got a lot of love for the U.S. military. I served 22 years. And they're really good at killing bad guys and breaking things. But unfortunately, they're also good at killing our own people. You know, I don't know what the next war is going to be. Maybe it'll be depleted ozone from a death rate. I don't know. But I do have confidence that we'll be able to come up with something, some sort of toxic entity that'll actually hurt and kill our own people. And if we don't try to get ahead of this early on, we're not only talking lives, we're talking dollars. And we should be trying to save both.
Yeah, and it's not only the war zones. You know, from the Camp Lejeune is just one example of stateside. So it was, when you mentioned having a research center and identifying where people are affected, I can obviously see some complexity with the fact that people may have multiple assignments. And, you know, the folks that are good with numbers trying to pin down where they acquired, you know, the toxins from that contributed to their particular illness. You know, they have multiple stateside assignments, multiple overseas assignments. But it's something that needs to be done. Where do you see that as far as congressional action, as far as, you know, that research center you talked about?
We're talking with, we shopped that first part of this year, and we've got a lot of good input, and we're going to try to get that in. Using that input, we're going to rewrite our draft legislation, hopefully to start looking for a sponsor, you know, by the end of the year, and maybe get it introduced next year. Is it going to pass this Congress? No, I doubt it. But at least we can get it in and get people, start getting people talking about it. But then again, we get into the problem of paying for it. You know, we have always said we waste so much money the last couple of months of the fiscal year, spend it or lose it.
Right.
And for those of you who aren't familiar with that term, what happens is the bean counters hold back all this money and then dump it at the last couple of months of the fiscal year, because they've got to be 80% allocated by August 31st, 100% by September 30th. And they say, go spend it. We don't care what you spend it on. And if you spend it wisely, they'll dump more money on you. So go do it. So it's wasted. We estimate $400 to $500 billion a year is wasted. We'd like to see, and we've asked for the last 2 years, get GAO in. They like this kind of stuff. Have them look at the last two fiscal years. Go back as far as you want. Look at the money and say, hey, this is, you know, what percentage is mission essential? Got to have it. What percentage is mission necessary? Got to have it if somebody, something breaks. What is mission relevant? And then the big one is what is mission irrelevant? Okay. Well, let's see how much money we are blowing down the toilet the last 2 months of the fiscal year. We know that in the last fiscal year, there was something like $95 billion in contracts, okay, in the last month. And that's just contracts. That doesn't count what you buy off the GSA schedule or what you get at internal things such as CertMart or supply centers or whatever, okay? It's brand-new contracts. And, folks, that's a lot of money that's going out. Improper payments between 2003 and 2016, we had $1.2 trillion with a T, federal government-wide,
wow,
in improper payments. In 2017,
wow,
the VA's share of that was $10.8 billion, and they recovered about 17%. Now, some of that is, hey, the government screwed up, and it would really hurt the individual to try to recoup that. And there needs to be a waiver process for that, no question. But there's a lot of money, especially government contract overpayments, that can be recovered. And the personal story was Hurricane Katrina. We evacuated to a friend's house in Baton Rouge, got a check for about $700 for dislocation. That was fair. Then we moved back home, you know, at the end of a week. A couple of weeks later, I get a call from our friend and says, look, you just got a $2,500 check here. Well, what's that for? So we call FEMA. Oh, that's for, you know, your hotels and so on. I said, we're back home. We never stayed in a hotel. What do we do with it? Oh, well, somebody can come get it. You know, after months and months and months, it took me 2 years to find some little old lady in tennis shoes in the bowels of FEMA who said, oh, yeah, Sonny, go ahead and send it here. We'll sort of take care of it. Thank you for your honesty. I mean, what? This happens constantly.
Right.
Now, I wasn't going to risk my law license for $2,500, but, you know, a lot of people will.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, it was interesting last year, when you're talking about trillions of dollars and billions, last October, Rick Hurley and I interviewed Professor Linda Bilmes, who was one of the co-authors of the book $3 Trillion Wars, and she was trying. She explained, I think, with a pretty good idea how people can understand the difference between million, billion, and trillion. You know, the words all rhyme, and people become clueless. And she said, if you had a stack of $1,000 bills, which I've never seen a $1,000 bill, but if you had a stack of $1,000 bills, $1 million would be 4 inches high. $1 billion would be about 350 feet, which is heading towards the height of the Washington Monument. And then $1 trillion in a stack of $1,000 bills would be 63 miles. So it shows you the difference in comparison between, you know, even a billion and a trillion, between something that's 350 feet and 63 miles. So when we're talking about, you know, $1 trillion being wasted, and it's just, it's mind-boggling. And
sure,
like you said, it could be spent on something else. It reminds me also of, go ahead, John, I'm sorry.
I was going to say, that's the game up there, you know.
Yeah.
And what happens? Congress will blame the VA. The VSOs will blame Congress. Then VA will blame both. And, in fact, you know, there's enough blame to go around for the VA. There's no question. But I will tell you this. Since Procopio decision, Secretary Wilkie has just been fantastic moving towards implementation. He's contacted with Secretary of the Navy. They talked. They've got getting duck logs in. People to plot everything, develop a list. You know, he's actually working hard towards implementation. I'll tell you, in his defense, you know, I don't think anybody could do more than what he's done, you know, these last few months. And we're starting to see some claims approved. But the Congress is just, you know, I never thought these words would pass my lips, okay? But right now, I feel more comfortable with the VA than I do with Congress.
Wow.
And the VSOs, I mean, they're the enemy. You know, if any of you guys are listening in, come on and sue me, Bub. I'll be looking forward to that lawsuit. I'll tell you, the DAV and the VFW are the worst. Legion, yeah, I'm not ready to rule them out completely yet. But, you know, they'll sit there and say, oh, well, they did it last year with the Blue Water Bill. We could have got the Blue Water Bill first. But the VFW, the DAV, the Legion, and I think it was Paralyzed Veterans, writes a letter to Isaacson, Senator Isaacson, says, look, we don't like to pay for the offset requirement under PAYGO. Well, that'd be okay, except they'd already agreed to it before the House committee, okay? So it's like, you know, what in the heck are you, where is your head? What are you trying to do? Are you trying to hurt veterans?
Right.
You know, you couldn't do a better job if that was what your intent was. So,
Well, they were also big proponents of the Appeal Modernization Act, which...
Oh, God.
Which you and your organization and other organizations, and Rick Hurley and I were frequent critics of it as it was working its way through Congress. But
and that's continuing. And you know, or maybe you don't, we filed a suit
on the final rule, because among other things, they the VA redefined supplemental claims to include, if filed within a first year, to basically be initial claims, which would keep attorneys from being hired for them. Then they also, where we had demanded the Senate and got a provision, we're saying they have to allow you to shift dockets. They put a one-year restriction on it. You know, there's nothing on that in the statute. And there's other things. We've got about five or six issues. It's military veterans advocacy versus the Secretary of Veterans Affairs. It's filed under 502 in the Federal Circuit, so if you want to bring it up on PACER. There's NVLSP, NOVA, and that guy out in Kansas, what's his name?
Ben Carpenter?
Yeah. They also filed them, but they're consolidated for oral argument and so on and so forth under our case. So we're the lead case on it.
Oh, well, good luck. That's important work. Go ahead.
That's frankly some of the things we're going to do is, you know, we've been bashing our head against brick wall in Congress. We're going to be looking more towards rulemaking requests. And if we don't like rulemaking requests out of the VA, we're going to go ahead and just file a 502 suit. I met with Secretary Wilkie in April. A very good meeting. We had 30 minutes one-on-one in his office, and I basically told him that. I said, look, we filed a rulemaking request on Guam. If you do what we say, we won't get along well. Otherwise, we'll sue you. And he said, yep, I know you will. And he actually did not take offense to that at all. He's actually a pretty good guy. But, you know, I'm beginning to think that we're going to get more through the courts than we are through Congress.
Wow, that's an interesting development. John, appreciate you sharing all your insights. Can you tell us how people can learn more about and support Military Veterans Advocacy? What's your website? Any other contact information you care to share with us?
Sure. Military Veterans Advocacy, you know, we are a 501c3 nonprofit. You can make tax-deductible contributions. Nobody takes a salary at MVA. That's why I say you're welcome to hire on or double my salary. We do like expenses paid. Those park benches up in D.C. are pretty hard, and in February they're pretty cold. So we don't stay at five stars. We fly Southwest. You know, we try to watch the pennies. But if you go to our website at www.militaryveteransadvocacy.org, you can actually go to the donate section and be able to make a contribution. We do take all major credit cards. We also have a CFC, Combined Federal Campaign, for those of you that are federal employees. Our CFC number is 59905. In fact, I gave Secretary Wilkie one of our pamphlets with that number and said, you know, the Secretary, you need to contribute to this. That'll help us come up and sue you. Okay. Again, he laughed. He's a great guy.
Yeah,
I think he's really trying hard. Or if you go to Amazon Shoppers, Amazon Smile, rather, and do your shopping, we have an Amazon Smile link. It's smile.amazon.com/ch/ our tax ID number 38-3890520. And I realize nobody really wrote that down, but if you just search for Military Veterans Advocacy on Amazon Spot, you should be able to find us. We're also on Facebook. We have a fundraiser going right now has a goal of $4,000, and we have an anonymous donor who's matching that. So if you go to our Facebook page, and please like us on Facebook. We've got about 11,000, almost 12,000 followers now. You'll be able to go there and donate as well. And that's actually a pretty good way to do it right now, because for every dollar, the anonymous donor will make another dollar contribution. And started out with 3,000. I talked him into 4,000. Maybe I can get him up to 5, but that fundraiser will go all the way through through the 4th of July. So, again, you know, any support is appreciated. Thing that we do is we litigate, legislate, and educate. And I think, as you guys know, no organization does all of that.
Right.
NOVA litigates, but they don't really legislate. The Big Six quasi-legislate, but they don't litigate. And, you know, we also educate by doing CLEs or continuing legal educations for attorneys. And that brings up the point, folks, if you're doing an appeal, don't go to a VSO. Most folks aren't qualified, and they don't know what they're doing. And, you know, we get calls all the time. Well, the VSO told us to do this. Well, you know, go ahead, but, you know, you're not going to get your claim done. Do what we tell you to do. Contact an attorney, and David and Richard are good. There are several others out there on our website that we recommend. There's just because we don't recommend them on our website, or I say websites, our Facebook page, doesn't necessarily mean that they're bad. It just means, you know, as far as the Blue Water claims, which is what we're concentrating on right now, that we've checked them out. They know exactly what they're doing. So,
yeah. Well, it makes good sense, John, and thank you for all the great work you're doing, and wish you the best. And hope you'll join us on the show in the future as you continue
to... Before John goes, David,
go ahead, Rick.
I've got some more stuff for him. John, before we went on the air, you and I were talking about some, you know, we're up to now, you've been talking about the Congress and administration at the VA. But, you know, for a lot of our veterans, that's kind of like shooting satellites and talking Mars to them. Getting down to the basic accountability that the VA owes to our veterans. You know, I'm sorry. You know, you're saying Mr. Wilkie's doing a great job, but I don't see it. I see so much crap going on. The same crap before he got in the job is still continuing today. There's no accountability. I mean, their mail system is atrocious. I mean, how difficult is it to fix that crap? Come on.
The problem is, and I don't know if you saw the Federal Register, where he just came out with his customer service goals, and they're very aspirational, okay? The problem is getting the person at the local VA office, at the local VA hospital or medical center, to meet those goals. And, you know, he and I talked about that. And I said, look, I think you got the right idea. Don't be wrong. But you're not out there and you're not able to, you know, basically go out and say, oh, here at Albuquerque, New Mexico, just making place up, they're not following what we're saying. They're, you know, it's hard. It's a big organization and it's going to take a long time to do it. I do owe him, and I've been so tied up with Blue Water Navy. He had asked me to write down my thoughts and some point papers on customer service, and I'm going to do that. And Rick, I'd love to hear your thoughts on that. Please feel free to send me an email offline on things that we can do to improve it. One of the things that I'm going to recommend to him is that we come up with ombudsman at each regional office and, again, at the at the clinics, not patient advocates. Patient advocates, generally, as far as I'm concerned, are worthless. They're shills for the director. Ombudsman, and I'd use people that were whistleblowers, to go out there and don't sit in their office, to be out pounding the pavement. You know, I wouldn't even give them an office. I'd give them a little, one of those little wheelchair carts with a place set up for a laptop. And have them go out, inspect every space in that facility, and talk to veterans, find out what the veterans are doing, and give them a separate chain of command to go up to the VISNs, and from there all the way up to the secretary's office, have a coordinator in the secretary's office. Can they go to the clinic director and say, hey, this is a problem, we need to do this. Sure, they can, but they have the separate chain of command through the secretary's office, and all their evaluations, promotions, and so on and so forth would come through there. That's one of the recommendations we're going to make. Now, I've already been told by some people, oh, you're just setting up a bunch of snitches. And the answer is, okay, sure, what's your point? You know, I mean, I don't know how else to do that, because a man doesn't know what's going on down on the deck place, as we used to say. He's never, you know, he can't take any action. That was one of the things about Secretary Shulkin, is he had given me his email. We had issues. In fact, you may remember the issue with the Bay Pines down in where they were housing the veterans in a building with no hot water and no heat, you know. And when that was brought to my attention, I sent out a email directly to Secretary Shulkin. By golly, he got on it. My last meeting with Wilkie, he almost also gave me his direct email, and I will use it if necessary. But, you know, again, it's having a group out there that's going to look out for the veterans and who don't necessarily have to answer. Well, don't answer to the clinic director, because most of those out there, there are some good ones. But, you know, there's a lot of bad ones as well. The other thing is an emphasis on customer service training. You know, it's... down in New Orleans, we have one of the worst customer service reputations in the system. And the medical center director, a guy by the name of Fernando Rivera, when he took over and we moved into the new facility, before anybody was allowed to move into the new facility, they went through intensive customer service training. And you can tell the difference. You know, they actually treat you like a human being rather than like a number. And, you know, it can be done, but it's going to take a while.
But there's more to do. What's interesting about what you just said there is, you know, I have hearings, you know, all over the country, and it's amazing how you can walk into a different a regional office and the difference in the attitudes of the people there. I mean, Birmingham, for instance, is extremely friendly. You walk in there, I mean, they couldn't be nicer. They're almost sitting you down and asking if you want a bottle of water. And, you know, you go to St. Pete, and it's the complete opposite. It's like, you know, what are we doing there? Houston was the same way. I went to Houston. I've been to Houston a bunch of times. And, you know, I don't even know why those people work there. They're so miserable. So, you know, it's unfortunate. You go around the country, and you've got different attitudes.
Oh, it's just like you walk into the door, and the first thing you see is the security. And, you know, I mean, hell, I walk into the Capitol building. I don't have to take my belt off. I don't have to take my shoes off. I don't have to do all the rest of this crap. And you got some rent-a-cop there saying, yeah, man, strip down. You know, it's I'm surprised they don't keep any clothes on. It's and they treat you like crap going in. And that's your first impression of the VA.
Right.
And, you know, I did mention that to the secretary. So, look, you go there, you don't have to go through these rent-a-cops. You're whisked through, you know. Everybody's there, everybody's in a smiley face, and they have hidden all the problems. So, you know, one of the things I did suggest to him as well, again, he keeps telling me I owe him that paper, and he's right, is make some unannounced visits. You know, it doesn't have to be him, but send folks out there just to show up looking like you're just Joe Veteran, see how they're treated. I think it'll open some eyes.
Yeah, I routinely tell my veterans whenever they're going for a CMP exam or going down to the VA centers, you know, take notes, and then when you're done with whatever you're doing, get back in your car, and before you start your engine and head off, just jot down exactly what happened, then shoot me an email. And let me put your notes in your file. And if I have to, you know, I'll send a follow-up email to somebody. Or at least get it in your file, get in your CMP file, exactly how you were treated, you know, maybe by the examiner, you know, for a PTS exam, let's say. And they got you in. You wanted to be there for a half hour, and they kept you there for 2 minutes. I mean, so many different things happen, as I'm sure you see, that That's one of the things that I'm trying to do with my veterans, you know, to kind of get some sort of accountability, because as you know, there's zero accountability in the VA.
Yeah, no, I agree. So that's kind of, you know, one of my projects is to put together some proposals and shoot them up to the secretary and see what he does. I mean, he may like them, he may not, but at least he's said he'll take a look at them.
Yeah, can't ask for more than that. It's great, great to hear about that from the new secretary. But John, we're about running out of time. Thank you again for being on our show, and wish you all the best. Hope you'll be back in the future with us. I know as you continue your work in litigation and education, I know you'll have a lot to share with us. So, thank you again.
Certainly will, and of course, Colonel Manis is the new executive director. I'd like to get him on one time too, you know, or maybe the both of us. And I'm sorry I dominated the conversation. I know you guys were trying to get a word in edgewise there, but I get up on my soapbox and it's hard to shut me down.
Well, we appreciate that.
We really appreciate it. That's why you're on the show, John.
Yep. All thank right, you then. Again.
Thank
Have
you.
A great evening. Take
thank
care.
You, John.
Bye.
Thank you. Well, thanks again to John Wells from Military Veterans Advocacy Organization for being on our show, and hope he and the new director will be back with us soon. So, Rick, we're about running out of time. Before we go to closing, anything you'd like to add?
No. It's John's always a wealth of information for us and veterans. I hope you tuned in and listened to what he had to say. It's great to have someone like John on the ground floor trying to move Congress, but apparently that's quite a job, and apparently that's not going to happen anytime soon. So that's all I have. How about you, David?
Well, I just wanted to mention that, as we mentioned last week, June is Post-Traumatic Stress Disorder, PTSD Awareness Month. It's PTSD is a common, often misunderstood condition that many veterans suffer from, particularly if they've been in combat, but not limited to being in combat. So we'd like to provide our weekly pitch for the Coaching Into Care program, if you'd like to do that, Rick.
Yeah, absolutely. Coaching Into Care. This program helps veterans having difficulty transitioning to home life. Returning home can be a tough adjustment, and loved ones can help. Coaching Into Care offers free coaching to help you help your veteran. Give the program a call. The number is toll-free at 1-888-823-7458. The hours are Monday through Friday, 8 a.m. to 8 p.m. Again, VA's Coaching Into Care number is 1-888-823-7458. In addition, I'd like to once again remind listeners that if you know a veteran who is suicidal or in a crisis of any kind, the U.S. Department of Veteran Affairs also has the Veterans Crisis Line to help. Call 1-800-273-8255 and press 1. Many veterans have committed suicide because they did not get the help they needed. Help them get the help care they need to cope with their problems. Once again, Veterans Crisis Line can help. Call 1-800-273-8255 and press 1. Back to you, David.
Rick, I just wanted, before I sign off, you have a guest lined up for next week. Can you tell us who that'll be?
I'm still confirming that. But at this point, I expect him to be, but I'm going to save that until next week.
Okay, next week. Okay, very good. All right, well, thanks to all our listeners tonight. Thank you for listening to the Veterans News Hour here on BBS Radio Station 1. I'd like to thank our sponsors, Joyce and Joe Chivaroli and Corey and Hurley Law Group, and thank our producer at BBS Radio, Mr. Doug Newsom. Hope you'll tune in next week at our current time, 7 p.m. Eastern, 6 p.m. Central, 5 p.m. Mountain Time, and 4 p.m. Pacific Time here at bbsradio.com Station 1 for another edition of the Veterans News Hour. We hope you'll tune in next week. Until then, have a great week. Good night.
Good night.
Thank you for listening to the Veterans News Hour with David Corey and Richard Hurley. We hope you found this week's program very informative. Be sure to invite your friends and all the veterans you know to tune in next week, when we'll have another great show on veterans issues. Meanwhile, you can listen to our other recorded episodes on the Veterans News Hour webpage on bbsradio.com. Thanks again for listening to the Veterans News Hour.